It's the most common order of cognition. First fashion, then designer. Same here. I saw these pants and was hooked. My name is Johanna, last name Schwab. I will be living in New York City for the next 6 months. As a lover of fashion and its invisible power, of words, voices and questioning, I had the idea to start a podcast. You will be getting a mix here. I'll put my soliloquies on record and do what I like the most. Talk to people whose work and thoughts I find inspiring. This podcast is called Refashion New York City. Imagine any pair of pants. Then turn them around. Focus on the back pockets. Now cut these out. Yes, you heard right. Fill them with plastic. Envision little curtains you put on the sides of the cutting. Now, if you want, think of some flowers to decorate the little windows. Isn't that neat? Yes, but it's more than that, and not the only interesting detail coming from the same maker. That's why I wanted to know who that person is that made these sticky pieces. Her name is Martina Cox, former art student that got into fashion by taking a break from university and starting a second-hand shop out of her apartment. Love that story? I do. As I did enjoy talking to Martina, loved her honesty and the laughter we shared. Got two favorite lines from this conversation. First, art and fashion should overlap as much as possible. Second, clothing is a bunch of support systems working in unison. The first time I saw Martina, as said within common order, was at the pop-up store of Café Forgot. I am constantly mispronouncing the name of that shop in the interview, sorry for that. But now Martina is the center of attention. We start with the wordplay. So the first word is wardrobe.
Huge.
Confidence.
Just one word?
Yeah, how you want.
I guess... I can only think of corny responses. Style.
Yeah, it's okay. Basic.
Classic.
Style.
Taste.
DIY.
Creativity.
Must have.
Shoes.
Passion.
Obsession.
Detail.
Intricacies.
Patchwork.
Collage. That's so cheesy, but yeah.
It's not fine. Yeah. You know, it's just like move into another direction before we come to you.
Yeah, it's so funny because all I can think about right now is how, like, my idol's Diana Vreeland, and I just keep thinking how, like, if Diana Vreeland was answering them, she would do it so fabulously, and I'm jealous.
That's tricky, mainstream.
Maybe misunderstood.
Yeah, nice. It's not about, like, that it has a truth or what you're saying, just, like, you know.
Yeah, my immediate reactions. It's totally. Because I talk so much, my immediate reactions are, like, full sentences and anecdotes. Yeah. I'm not used to consolidating things into one word. Mm. I guess because I'm also not, like, the most well-written person. You know, I don't write so much, so I feel like my vocabulary is kind of stunted.
Okay, but we come to your anecdotes, hopefully now, maybe, with the question I prepared. So yes, I've seen you at Larry NYC, mm-hmm. As part of a talk in the pop-up shop of Café Forgot. Mm-hmm. And I knew your work from before, so it was very nice to now know who's the designer, really. Mm-hmm. Because also from your photos, I didn't, you know,
no
before,
tells, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I didn't know who that is.
I get that a lot, like, oh, you're Martina.
Yeah.
I kind of love that. It's so like classic modern day Instagram relationships.
Totally. And it was funny before I was waiting for half an hour maybe, and there were many women alone going there to the talk, and they all had their Instagram before. you know, yeah. waiting for the talk.
Oh,
you
really?
Know, like, we're all Instagramming that, that I think was funny.
Oh, wait, like, Instagramming the shop or the event?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, I like the relation, the contrast in that shop because it's so based off, it's, like, such a, like, product or, like, a child of Instagram, but at the same time, like, what they do is, like, they're honing back to, like, a style of selling clothing and shopping that's, like, from, I think, inspired from, like, a different decade in New York where everything was very, like, I guess the word has such a different meaning now, but bohemian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like I love that word for other reasons. I wish I thought of it before for one of those answers. But, yes, I think a professor that I really, like, really looked up to and admired at Cooper, she described my senior show as, like, a rare instance of, like, bohemian that doesn't happen as much in New York, which I thought was, like, really such a powerful, like, amazing compliment to receive from her. And I think Café Forgot definitely parallels my work and the speed that things are, like, sold and the way things are sort of done. And, but then it's Instagram.
So, in that talk, what I remember best was how you were describing your way from the art school into fashion,
mm-hmm.
something I can also relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for you to tell it.
Sure, I can do a better job now. I was so nervous.
I was
like, how do I make my voice stop shaking? I'm really shy in certain situations, especially like that. It was my first time speaking in front of a group of people, but now I'm more comfortable to talk about it because it was such a shit show. I was, like, having a horrible time in art school. I went to a science high school, and I got really into drawing, into graphic design, and I decided that I would apply to one art university, and if I got in, I would go to it. And I did, thankfully. And I just didn't really, it wasn't, Cooper is very intellectual, it's very academic, and the work was very conceptual, and I felt, I think I was just like an infant in like the terms of like being an artist, and I didn't really fit in. I felt very stupid there. I developed like a horrible tic of like turning bright red whenever I spoke because I would feel like whatever I was saying was just dumb. And I think that's like a sad part of like a school like that where it's such an amazing school and there's like a really wonderful community that's formed, but like I felt so horrible in that school. And when I went to Utica, I felt very similar, actually.
So there was a level of judgment you felt like, or a competition
amongst
the students.
Yeah, I mean,
of course I wonder
how much of that was imagined in my head. But then there were also times where, like, I had a critique once where I was, like, torn apart and I, like, ran out of the room crying. And I had, like, work that was sort of belittled in, like, terms that, like, critiques that are supposed to be constructive, it, like, would sometimes become almost personal. And that's when I knew I wasn't imagining it. But I, like, just thought it was a weird loophole or something where everything else in the school seems so supportive and so against things like that happening that I just was always wondering how something like that could happen. You know, having other, like, women talk about my work as, like, I think once I got the term Miley Cyrus feminism. Basically, I just was really uncomfortable, and I think it was because a lot of the work I was making was very confused, and I was making work that I felt like should be made in art school so it could be talked about, not like work that was coming from, you know, a place of honesty. And I was just like I don't think I was making very good work. I didn't know how to talk about it, and that was definitely a product of it. And so yeah, it's like a whole mix of things. I took a year off. I worked freelance for this photographer who's been a really good friend of mine for a while now. His name's Michael Dweck. He does like documentaries right now, but and during that time I started a vintage store. I ran it out of my house.
I love that story.
Yeah.
Like out of your apartment or?
Literally out of my apartment. I bought a huge lot off Craigslist of vintage clothes. And got like all the clothing racks, got a huge lot of clothing hangers, and I would have it open on weekends.
And how did you, advertise it? Like, or was it already Instagram?
It was in a huge loft space in Bushwick, so I would just put posters up all around because it was like five floors, like one of those huge buildings. And I would just keep the door open and play music out loud, like really loud out of it, mm-hmm. so people like walking down the hallway would know that it was like open, like a place. And it didn't do that well. It was just more fun for me to do. And then during the week, I would put it up online. But I would have like a little events there and stuff. And I started putting everything online, and then I just started selling all of it online. And I stopped the store because I wanted to go out on weekends. And so I started putting everything online, and then I just became pretty big with selling clothing online. It was like, I was so happy. I was like, wow, I get to thrift for a living. This is all I ever wanted, because I've been thrifting clothing since I was like in middle school. And then I started to, like, that's when I started altering garments sometimes, or like, you know, I'd be like, oh, this would be so much better if I added this to it. And then this was like from January up until the end of the summer, and when school started coming around, I was like, I've been so happy selling clothing that like I just don't want to stop working with this. I want to try and turn this into my medium. And it just like segued very beautifully into into my final year at Cooper, where I started making clothing, because while I was thrifting, I was always imagining things that I wanted, and so that's when I started making them. Yeah.
So did you you've shown also like your fashion at the university, like when you went back to art school. Mm-hmm. So did the people perceive you different at that time then?
Yeah, it was much
and
more.
And you changed too, or?
Yeah, I changed a lot. I changed a lot for sure. And I was making work that I was very proud of, and it was much stronger. Mm-hmm. I still felt pretty awkward around school sometimes, but I definitely felt a lot better, because all of a sudden I was working from inside out. This time it started to like, I was projecting that and having that positive experience in the space. You know, it has so much to do with you internally, like the space that you can make and the space that you can create in terms of having like a good experience versus a bad experience. So yeah, it was really nice that my last year it was just on a, like, I had found something I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. And I also, like, in another interview, I read two things played a role in moving into fashion too, which was your time in Berlin.
Yes.
And also your grandma. Maybe you can shine a light on.
I don't want to talk about both of those situations.
I'm sorry. So maybe what do you want to do first, then we can do the other ones later.
I'm just joking. Okay. Because
Berlin is hedonistic, and like,
and my grandmother was like very, yeah, very Catholic, yeah, very strict, very driven. So yeah, totally. I guess I just like, I started clubbing a lot. I went to Berghain a lot. I didn't like the all black thing. I thought that was so stupid. And I met my best friend there, and we were always like talking about how much we hated dressing in all black. And at the same time, I also just started discovering one of my favorite artists, thinking of taking one of his favorite looks and dressing up for Halloween in it. But I don't dress up for Halloween, so I don't know. I was just thinking if I would. I guess I would. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Lee Bowery is one of my favorite artists, and I had just watched his documentary around that time, and I was like blown away, and it just completely changed how I saw art and fashion functioning, and how it didn't necessarily, like, those were two realms that should absolutely like overlap as much as possible. Mm-hmm. It was so life-changing for me, and it makes me like he's changed so many people's lives, and so I just felt like proud to be one of those people. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, yeah, he took clubbing, art, like high society, like performance, dance, theater, like he really just put it all under this like gaze of like clothing and fashion, and it was so beautiful, and I was just like, I just want to look like that at the club. Mm-hmm. And I started like treating, like, I guess I started, like, calling, like, collaging. Like, I saw, like, getting dressed as, like, you could, like, really collage things and, like, just, like, attach, like, inanimate objects to, like, something that you're wearing. And it, like, I always loved having, like, little things that I could show and, like, or, like, play with, or, you know, like, I just have these, like, attachments to my outfits that made it feel like a collage, but also were, like, very fun for me. Things like that, or just taking, like, a piece of a strip, like scraps, like fabric scraps, and seeing how I could like wrap them around my body in ways that I thought was like nice compositionally. And that was when I started being like, oh, I like how I'm thinking about this, like I'm approaching this like how I would like a collage or a painting. This was the summer before I was coming back to school, and I was just like, wow, this really feels like a studio practice. Like, I would love to just get dressed and like like get dressed up as like my piece.
Yeah, but back to Berlin. Did the
That was when I was partying in Berlin for sure. Yeah, like getting dressed up for the parties is like what I was talking about, like how I would take fabrics or toys and just sort of like attach them and like assemble like things that I saw as pieces, but they were on my body.
When Martina told me about the collaging she did on her clothes, I was sure she got comments. And I was curious of what she thought they were.
I've been weirdly lucky in terms of like the type of energies I attract in public. I've always just been approached for compliments. I've never really been like once me and my friend were talking about it in Berlin, how she says she gets approached by people all the time and they like kind of attack her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I feel like I'm the total opposite. And like within that half hour, like someone complimented my jacket and someone called her like a fake punk.
Yeah.
And so I feel like some people attract different energies, like in terms of like strangers on the street in cities. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like so fortunate because I've totally noticed that I get a lot of like positive feedback from strangers.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had very little negative experiences with like looks I've worn in a club or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Like, do you want to go from the club to grandma, or should we talk about Coffee Forgot Again?
It's fine, I can do that. So basically, I grew up going to Italy every summer.
Because your grandma is from Italy, or?
Yeah, my mom's from Italy, actually.
Wow, where exactly?
So my mom was born in Florence. She was raised in Milan and Rome, so very, yes, just like,
I know. Nobody sees our eyes rolling, no?
Yeah. Yeah. So very, very nice. Very, like, my grandmother was so classy and hardworking. She had, like, a red Fiat 500. I'm trying to think. Yeah, just, like, had so much style. So much elegance and so much style. And she always smoked some Slim cigarettes. And she always had one, like, in the kitchen while she was listening to opera, like, cooking lunch at 9 a.m. or starting at 9 a.m. And I just was always just so taken aback by that. It's so different than any lifestyle I know, because New York City is, like, different for our age group. But I just, like, love the romance of it. It was, like, I guess when my grandfather retired, he was an electrical engineer. And an inventor. He was working for Olivetti, which is also very classy. They had the best graphic design. Have you ever seen their
like also cars?
No, Olivetti did like typewriters.
Okay, I have to look that up. Yeah, typewriters. Okay,
they had the most amazing graphic design. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so that's why they lived in Rome and Milan, because he was based out of Milan first, and then they moved to Rome. And then once he retired, they moved like an hour north of Rome in the like countryside area. And so, yeah, my grandmother would get up every day at, like, 5 a.m., and she would do, like, the laundry by hand, and then hang the laundry, and do, like, mending of clothes very early in the morning, and then I think around, like, 9 or 10, I would wake up and have milk and cookies for breakfast. It's, like, so unreal. And then she would start cooking lunch around that time, and that's the scene I described with her, like, having her cigarette, like, always hanging from her mouth, like, playing opera in the background, and, yeah, it was just so dramatic and amazing, and her work ethic was something that I just have always been so taken aback by, and, like, so in admiration of, and she was very, very, like, religious, and very Italian grandmother. Mm. Yeah, her name was Luisa.
Luisa, do you speak some Italian?
Yeah, I do speak Italian.
Because,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the way you pronounce sounds very Italian for me.
Okay.
And also, but she didn't teach you to sew, but, like, the when you now make clothes, you sometimes think of her, that's maybe the...
Oh, yeah. She actually did. I used her old sewing machine a lot. I had, like, the foot pedal. It was, like, very big and old, and I remember I was very into sewing for a little bit when I was in... like when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would sort of sit me down and teach me some things, and but you know, we were all like, not like, I was never scared of her, but she was so strict that sometimes I kind of like, I liked being nervous around her or something. And yeah, she was so talented. Like, she would crochet like me these amazing pieces when I was a kid, like dresses and actually, yeah, just, like, I had some of the most beautiful crocheted dresses that she made me when I was a kid.
Wow.
Yeah, and so one fabric that she worked with a lot was, like, this, like, little rose patterned fabric. And it was funny, I made, like, a similar pattern where it was like phallic roses, but it's like they're really tiny, and in a pattern like on the, you know, I think I made like some gloves with it, and I had it printed and I included it in some pieces. But anyways, it was just funny because I had completely forgotten about the like G-rated version, or I guess the original version, until my mom saw the one that I made. She's like, oh, this looks exactly like the fabric your grandmother worked with all the time. And I had completely forgotten about it. It was just like totally instinctual.
Yeah.
Definitely buried in the archives of my memory, and I just sort of like pulled it out, I guess, without really realizing it. And when my mom like brought it up to me, I was just like kind of, I don't know, it was a nice surprise, I guess.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love this moment.
Yeah, it just made me feel like, I guess I was like, oh, I'm not that far off.
Yeah.
In some minutes, Martina will talk about her stubbornness. And listening to the record, I realize how stubborn I am too. I just cut off her family stories to talk about my personal interest in comparing New York and Berlin.
Could you, or is there something, when you were in Berlin for a year, you said, or?
It was confusing. I did a year abroad.
Yeah.
At Utica.
Yeah.
And then I moved there last year. I thought I was going to live there permanently.
Okay, wow. So, and how would you describe the difference of the vibes in New York and Berlin? Is there something like, because I'm sure when you went there, you felt like, okay, it's different somehow than New York. And which were the points?
Everyone here works so much more.
Mm-hmm. That the pressure for the
no offense the to rent. Berlin.
That's true. No.
Not even that, though. I don't even know if it's the pressure of the rent. Like, as soon as I moved back here, I got so many requests for collaborations, for participating in shoots, for, like, it was so much more, like, high, I guess you could call it, like, high-strung energy. Mm-hmm. Like, not just, like, high energy, it's, like, very high-strung, like,
yeah.
You know, not necessarily a good thing, but a lot at once, and it was just crazy coming from Berlin where everything just seemed so, like, in some sort of like not lazy, I don't want to use that word, more like in a daze, or like everything's very pretty and like relaxed, and it also is a great way to produce work, but it's not like amped up or something. Yeah.
But why did you come back? Do you want to talk about that, or?
Oh yeah, I guess I broke up with my partner in April, and it just made so much sense because I was sending all my clothes here. Mm-hmm. I was sending all my clothes here. I was trying to organize things with Cafe Forgot from Germany, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really loved Berlin, but I just saw, like, myself thriving more here.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I really just wanted to live, you know, I was so set on living there, and I really was stubborn about it, but I knew that, like, I'm always, like, stubborn until, like, I give in, and then it's just, like a light switch or something. Mm-hmm. And so I did it. I moved back here, and I definitely don't regret it. As much as I love Berlin, like, I want to, like, organize my life so that I can go there, you know, at least once a year or something. But, because I have so many close friends there as well. But it was a really good decision to come back here. You know, like, being in this spa space, having my own studio, and being around these people has been amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I worked as a receptionist at a hair salon last year.
I was at a hair salon.
Job.
Funny, because I thought, like, a receptionist, I always think of hotel.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah.
So at a hair salon, I love
so
it.
So that's why I was wondering why you can't speak German so well, because I'm sure, like, in a hotel, it would be much more international people, but
right.
In a hair salon, I'm sure you would have met.
I didn't speak German, like, on my first week.
Yes.
I would, like, answer the phone so nervous. I would have, like, a script, like, I wrote out in front of me, and, like, if anyone asked a not normal question, I wouldn't know, and I would just give them my script. And then they would be like, start speaking in English.
It's also nice. That's a not normal question. It just means, like, I cannot answer it in German, or I cannot understand it. Yeah, nice. Yes, and also, since I'm also a fan of thrifting, I was wondering if you can tell me something about the fascination that, you know, that thrifting has for you. You know?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I was, like, blown away by how cheap it was when I was younger, because I was, like, in middle school. So when I graduated from spending all my allowance money on Kid Robot vinyl toys, I would start going to thrift stores. And I had, like, a fashion blog when I was, like, 12.
Wow.
huh. or 13. And that's when I started thrifting a lot, because I wanted to always, like, make new outfits. And we had, yeah, we would go to Long Island sometimes, like, in the summer, and there was a thrift store there. It was just, everything was so cheap. I was like, why would anyone shop anywhere else?
Yeah.
And, I guess it just sort of, like, has always been a huge part of my life. I just, like, I'm never, like, struck by clothing, like, when it's, like, in a store, like, store setting where there's so many of each one and, like, all in different sizes. It just feels like it's hard for me to focus on it or something, which sounds weird. I just like having one piece only that you have, like, access to in a store.
But did you ever prefer, like, a special time where you're, like, focusing on 70s clothes and vintage?
Of course, was it
70s or 80s?
I loved 70s for sure. Loved 90s. I think in high school, like, did you ever see the movie Poison Ivy?
No. There's so much I have to do now. Oh, maybe
It's kind of a creepy movie, actually, because it's, like, really young Drew Barrymore having, like, an affair with, like, I forget the actor's name. It's kind of gross, but I just, like, was so obsessed with Drew Barrymore's style. That was, like, my inspo for, like, a lot of high school, like, very 90s, like, light wash denim and, like, lipstick and very, like, I guess 90s, like, Catholic, Drew Barrymore seductive, like, a whole package of that. And so that was really good for thrifting.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, so I wanted to come back to Café Forget. They now distribute your fashion or, and I read that they found you through Instagram. So did they ever tell you how exactly they found you? Like, was it through hashtags or?
No, I think it was through my senior thesis exhibition, which I have on my website, actually. The title was "Pay No Attention to That Man Behind the Curtain," which is a line from The Wizard of Oz. But that was the show that I had in April 2018, and I remember my friend Juan was having his show in the basement. Nails by Juan. He does a lot of the nail art for so many different. He's done so much in the past year. It's amazing. He's really, like, flourished. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen some of his work. He's done a lot of stuff for music videos and different musicians and performances and photo shoots. But yeah, his nail art is, like, just sickening. And so he had his show in the basement, and so there was, like, so many of our friends, like, mutual friends were there, and I think he also had, like, some connections to Dis magazine that were there, and so they saw my show as well. And so it was, like, a lot of people posted the show on social media. It got, I think Dis magazine had some photos up on their Instagram as well.
So that's also how it, because I was wondering if the viral hit started with, like, the collaboration with Café Forgot, but somehow already through your first show.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't viral. I think the most viral thing that happened was, like, over the summer with those pants. But that was how, I guess, it was, like, the first time that my clothing was, like, really being put online, because I was always just posting, like, in my studio whenever I liked something. I didn't take it as, like, serious. It was, like, more, like, documentation processes. But then after the show, it was, like, my work was, like, out for, like, it was, like, you know, public consumption of it or something. Like, people that I didn't know, and not my parents or friends or sister.
I wrote something down about that pants, because I like them. I like them very much. And I just want to read it, that it's, like, that I don't confuse it. So the pants we were talking about are, like, you cut out the back pockets and then you replace them with plastic and then they look like, they start to look like a little window, and then you put little curtains on the sides maybe, and sometimes also little flowers. And what I love about them is also, you know, you can talk about them, you can get be very precise and not like only, oh, that's so cute, and you know, I love how the picture, how easy it is to describe, and yet it has a feel that is not describable. It's just beautiful too. Thank you. You know.
Yeah, I think maybe it like satisfies like both ends of like fine art viewers or something. You know, people that don't necessarily like have to, like, you know, when people feel intimidated by looking at a piece of art and like don't know how to talk about it. I think it lends itself to being easily talked about or something, which is how I wish Like, because I guess maybe it's, like, a reflection of how sometimes people's work, like, I feel uncomfortable, like, with not knowing how to maybe navigate it or navigate around it, since, like I said, I'm not sometimes the best with, like, describing how I feel, like, into words, or, mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, but at the same time, there is so much loaded imagery and messages in it. Obviously, it wasn't, like, intentional.
Martina further says she is not a super genius that has planned on the great success the pants became. She was surprised too.
I think just sort of like a nice surprise, like when I was able to stand back and look at it. But then I think that's also why it got so viral and it felt like unfair, because it's not just that, you know, it's not just like a funny, it's not a joke or like a funny pair of pants. I mean, yeah. It is, but it also isn't. And it felt like so many viewers just got one side of that.
But you know what, I also wrote down, like, it's a funny comment about what fashion is in general about, because it's about hiding and showing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it makes, like, then it's not a short joke or something, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, but mm-hmm. it really made me think about, like, what is fashion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah, that's something that I love about it. It's like the power you can have or not have based on what you're showing or not showing or covering or not covering, especially when it comes to like a femme body.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Martina also installed little windows on sweaters in front of the breast. Here the curtains become very real. With a little cord, you can lift or lower the fabric, show or hide the boobs. She is now going to tell me how she showed such a sweater in art school for the first time. She liked it, even when something happened she didn't intend.
I think that was actually kind of a beautiful moment. I was first showing one of my window sweaters in class at a critique. I was so nervous because, like, I was, like, wearing underwear with, like, the little men attached to them, and I was wearing one of my sweaters that had my left boob out, and, with the curtains and the flower box, and I just got so nervous when I took off the robe and was standing in front of the class that my body temperature rose so much that the window got fogged.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, my nerves, like, censored.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It was, like, very unintentional, but, like, it was great. Yeah, it made me really happy.
Yeah. So how was the reaction then? I'm sure, like, the people...
I think it was brought up, but, like, because we were in a critique setting, we were just trying to move on and talk about things and maybe not address that I was, like, shaking and my face was red and I was clearly sweating a lot.
Pretending to be very academic about it, or...
Yeah, yeah, like, just, like, you know, I'm a human, so I can't control certain things.
Totally.
Then I wanted to know how that feels, to have this huge recognition on Instagram. She says it's a mix. And it's still very fresh and therefore not easy to talk about it. She is afraid that her work is now reduced to the window pieces, but there is definitely a good side to it too.
But then also it did give my work such a platform. Like, it so many people did find me through those pants, and I guess that's the more positive way to look at it, that despite that, like, there were so many people that maybe just saw this as, like, a one, you know, like, clickbait is nice, but not what I meant. Clickbait, like, you know, like, it's just like, you like it, you get it, you move on to your newsfeed, you know? It's, like, so saturated with that feeling, which is maybe where that's coming from. But then when I remove that and I think about, like, the appreciation posts and the messages that I've gotten, the people that have told me that they, like, I re-interested their, like, re-sparked their interest in fashion, or younger girls in high school, they're like, I really just, like, I bought a sewing, or, like, I brought my sewing machine back out, and things like that, I think is just, like, that is such a beautiful product of that, and that's the good side of Instagram. Yeah. I also was, like, able to start supporting myself a little bit more on my own work, because I was getting these requests. It's still very hard to buy pieces for me, I think, because you have to email me what you want. But I think I want to change that, because I would like to support myself on... I would love to be exclusive and elusive like that, but I can't afford to.
I wanted to, if you want to talk about details, I've seen, like, more, how do I say that, an earlier post where you said, like, time for details. And I was wondering if, detail is something you feel is important for you, and why.
Yeah, I get, like, super manic about it. Like, I just get really, like, it's like, when you, like, when you dig yourself into a hole deeper and deeper, I can do that in the details of a piece, and it's like something like that I like take pleasure out of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like in terms of like having, you know, like that fabric I use with the cowboys, the topless cowboys, you know, like lining up a piece so that like I'll have like his eyes peeking out of like a seam in like the shoulder or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like things like that. It's why I spend like way too many hours on my work, and sometimes I don't really get paid necessarily for mm-hmm. my pieces based on the time I go into it, but I can't change my being. Yeah. I'm trying to think another example of details, but yeah, painting tiny flower floral prints. I love painting floral prints because it's so tedious.
Yeah, nice.
Now we are going to talk about another important detail in Martina's work. She calls them clingy men. I needed some time to get used to them, but now I think it's one of the most inventive things I've seen in the fashion of our days. But what is it I am talking about? It's little sculptures she molds by hand and attaches to clothing. They can replace suspenders or try to climb up one of the bespoken windows, to name only some of their appearances.
What I like about your work, it somehow makes me think about stuff I never thought I'd think about before, you know?
Like the term.
And also I felt like they could be also seen as the embodiment of desire, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, because they try to, you mm-hmm. know, climb the clothes mm-hmm. and it's again a fashion comment, and
it also has to do with like support systems as well, because when I just remember like having my mind blown when I started working with clothing as a medium and I was trying to write about it. Like I said, I don't write a lot, so it was one of those times, and I was like, oh my gosh, like it was like one of those times where I was like, I should write more, because you just discover more about yourself. But yeah, like clothing is a bunch of support systems working in unison, like straps, like clasps, like they're all like mm-hmm. they're supporting each other. And I just like all of a sudden those ideas of like support and like that like reaching and desire, but like in conversation with a body, was what excited me about it most, and what like sparked that practice and interest. And like, yeah, making them is a lot.
Yeah, and it's amazing, because I felt like I had to get used to them. At first I was like, what's that, you know?
Yeah.
And then I start to like them. Like, sometimes I have that with songs that you feel like, do I like that song? I don't know. And then you listen to it all more often. Like, it's the same happened to me. Like, just getting used to them.
Mm. Yeah, they're kind of irksome.
Yeah. But then there's a point where you start to love them. And they really...
Oh, yeah. I have great relationships with them.
But you describe them as men?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, even though they're so like androgynous and like sexless.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
And so also coming back, you are a painter too?
I used to do a lot of painting.
Yeah.
A lot of like abstract painting. I just really liked how male dominated it was.
Yeah.
And I liked that, like, I just thought it was so funny, the idea that people called like abstract expressionism, or like, you know, something like Jackson Pollock is like using like their, like, it's like compared to the analogy of like ejaculating on a painting.
Mm.
And I just thought it was like, I just thought that was like the funniest image ever. And then I just liked the idea of doing it, I guess, more than I did. I don't know, I was very passionate about it for like a year, but I was thinking of turning some of those paintings into clothes soon.
Yeah, nice.
Because I have them rolled up on canvases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was also asking you because I was wondering if there's a special fascination for somehow European art, because on your website you're like having this Bosch pants and Bali
Export.
Well,
surrealism is really what I just started working with the most, because I remember seeing some work that like Dali made, and some work that Dali made with Elsa Schiaparelli,
mm-hmm.
and like I just really started to love the conversation that was happening with surrealism and surrealist artists in the early 20th century, like, and fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where a lot of my work starts to stem from, and Bosch is like considered grandfather of surrealism, so it just felt more like an homage to him in terms of me like wanting to hone into like surrealist artists and they're like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was one part, but also like this 60s feminism, like also the topic of empowerment of applied arts. Mm-hmm. And women, you know.
Like my email is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My email.
Genital Panic.
Yeah, that's the name of a piece. One of my favorite pieces.
Yeah.
From the artist Valley Export, who has like had a huge influence on like me working with like, or like the way that I look at making work involving the femme body, like in a fine art practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like one of her pieces, Tap and Touch Cinema. I love that one so much. Mm-hmm. She's like wearing, just to describe, she's wearing like a theater over her chest, and she stands in Berlin in like the 60s, and she invites anyone to come and touch her boobs mm-hmm. for 10 seconds. You like, it's like a contraption so that you can't see her boobs, but you can like put, it's like a curtained box, so you put your hands in and you can touch her boobs for 10 seconds. And there's a video of her doing it, and it's like so empowering and so creepy and so like, like, also, she's so vulnerable, too, but, like, her face during the whole thing is just incredible.
Mm.
Yeah.
And a little detail, I like that, because in your signature, or for the males, you explain why you took that email.
Yeah, because I don't want people to think that it's my...
Like, totally. Yeah. That's one part of it, but the other part is, like, I think it's a nice idea. It's a nice...
Oh, it's
nice,
great way to share.
Totally.
It's like, yeah, I'm, like, sharing artwork without people even asking.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also context for your work and
mm-hmm. yeah, I think
other
yeah
approaches.
For sure. I hope it's okay that I did that, but I think it's fine.
I think so. Like the way you did it was fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. My throat is starting to hurt.
Yes, and I'm okay. You know, like
got a lot of stuff.
I got a lot of stuff. Thank you so much.
And I think I'm actually working now on having another exhibition soon because
amazing.
Yeah.
When will it be? You know that already?
No, I don't. I really don't. But I really, like, miss having... Like, I want to have a practice that's not just me sending everything I own out. I want to have, like... It's a really new method of working that I'm not used to, but... I was thinking of having another exhibition where it's more, like, in a space, and it's not just about fashion-y, fashion side of fashion things.
Yeah. But can you imagine having a mix that people have your clothes on and also, like, presenting them in a...
Yeah, I hope to work with, like, different dance... Like, I hope to work in performance or dance a little bit also mm-hmm. in the future.
Cool.
But, yeah, so when I have more information about that, I will let you know.
Yeah, that will be cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.